Mind Your Farm Business on realagriculture.com is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
Welcome to the Mind Your Farm Business podcast, brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. I'm Sean Haney, founder of realagriculture.com. I want to remind you that you can find more episodes of this podcast by going to mindyourfarmbusiness.com. Have you ever tried to have a discussion with someone and you just know they are resisting the effort to make it a meaningful one for their own reasons? Now, this could be due to guilt, pride, or just a general willingness to kick the can down the road. We've all been there with our spouse, our kids, or a friend. But what if it was with your parents? And just to add a little bit of complexity to all this, what if your parents are also your partner in the family farming operation? So what do we do when mom and dad will not have that difficult discussion about family farm succession? Well, I've pulled in a real expert to discuss this important topic today, and I know we will all have some big takeaways from this episode. Joined right now on the Mind Your Farm Business podcast by an old friend.
Wait a minute.
No, I didn't say you were old. I said our friendship is old.
There you go.
Jolene Brown. Jolene, how's it going?
I'm just loving to be here. And you and I get to work with the best people on this planet. So how can we not be good?
Yeah, well, that's very, very true. And you know what? There's a lot of adversity. There's a lot of opportunity in our industry. But one of these pieces of adversity long term that we're constantly dealing with is the idea of farm transition.
Yes.
And I do believe this is that as difficult as the process of that happening is difficult sometimes, getting it started.
Yes.
That is really, really, really a problem. And what I hear a lot from a lot of our audience is, especially from the younger generation.
Yes.
Is I've tried. I've tried to get the conversation started, and my parents don't want to engage. They're not ready. They see that it has something to do with their time left at the farm, and then we get into maybe some very difficult conversations, and I just want to have a discussion. I'm sure you hear about that lots, too.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to begin with honoring what the senior generation has done. Sometimes when I work with family businesses, the first thing we do is say, so tell me about this farm, we'll get started. We go back to grandmas and grandpas and uncles, and sometimes the young generation has no idea what they have been through to be where they're at today. And that journey is one of hard work, it's pride, and it's earned. So as we're going to talk about the transition, how can they still be involved in the work? What can they be proud of, and how are we going to demonstrate that we're so grateful for them and be appreciative along the way? So how do you start the conversation? Well, we often have the upstarts and the old farts. And in between, we got to get something talked about, right?
Ain't that the truth?
And so often at these workshops, I will divide the audience in the upstarts and the old farts, and I say, so what keeps you up at night? Why do you need them? Why do they need you? What are we going to do to make sure that we're ending up here more in the middle to get it done? Now, to start a conversation, quite often that happens when there's been a death in the neighborhood or they see another farm going on the auction block because they had fighting on the way to the funeral home.
I don't want this to be me.
Yes. Yep. So I don't want them quitting. I want them passing on the baton. But as you pass on the baton, we still need you. The real key here has to do especially with financial security and control and emotional readiness. It doesn't matter if the next generation is ready if the senior generation isn't. And if they are not financially secure to take care of their living, their lifestyle that they have earned, that they built up, then the next generation should not be counting on those assets. And I almost have to say to the senior generation, I cannot do this for you, but there are financial planners who don't charge anything. Now, be careful, they're going to sell you products because you're going to have to take a look. But a reality, if this is what you can control and have, what are you going to need all the way from, in the States, the long-term health care, to have a house that's handicap accessible if you need, to be able to travel as you've always wanted to do? What's it going to take for you to have the lifestyle and living you want? And then we have to make sure enough assets stay in their name under their control. If you do not do that, they will micromanage the next generation to death because you're dinking with their security.
So as I hear you talking about that and appreciating some of the work that has been done, I think of when I was younger, when my grand...
Oh, you mean you're old too?
Yeah, exactly. In my younger days, I remember my grandfather talking about the 30s.
Yes.
And I had heard some of those stories so many times that I got to the point where maybe my eyes were rolling in the back of my head.
Yes.
And maybe in retrospect, as you're describing this, could have maybe handled that better by showing appreciation of that sacrifice that was made, even though it was a very, very long time ago. But maybe that's a part of this whole process, yes. Is everybody sort of understanding where each is coming from.
That, and what that does, Sean, is it gives you a common bond of a journey. It doesn't just start because I joined the farm 7 years ago. I graduated from university, I'm farming there, and now I want to own assets.
Yeah.
It doesn't start there. Now, if that's our goal, that we get asset transition, then how we do that again is not so hard. It actually becomes easy because we have ways of structuring, good advisors to help us do that. But I always have to ask the senior generation three questions. The first is, do you really want this business to continue? You've worked extremely hard to get there. So has, if it's third generation, the generation before you. Do you want the business to continue? And I want a yes or a no.
And be honest about it.
Well, whatever you say, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. Because if you say yes, then we're going to start the transition work. Then if you say yes, the number one job is to replace yourself. Now, we're not kicking you off the farm. Boy, do we need the wise masters. We need you doing jobs you can still safely do. And by the way, senior generation, you don't get to choose the jobs. As my father-in-law, who didn't think he should have to stop at a stop sign, we decided maybe he shouldn't be hauling in corn anymore.
Yeah,
you know?
No kidding.
So the second question is, so you want it to continue. When are you going to transition it? Is it incrementally while you're the teacher? Are you only going to transition knowledge but never assets? Can they earn sweat equity and receive compensation in terms of assets? There's ways to do this. And are you going to transition it at the reading of the will? Surprise. Just tell me, because if that's what you're going to do, I have different advice for the other generations that are following you because of the risk that's involved. Then the third question you answer, with whom are you going to transition? Not just the labor, because we'll do that, not mm-hmm. just management, especially technology now that we have to use, but when are you going to transition the ownership of assets? And once I get the answer to those three questions, I would tell you the pain of it begins to become a joyful journey.
That drops the barriers.
Yeah. And what it says is, you're not kicking me out. I'm going to be recognized. We've got a generation who we are teaching along the way. We're not turning it over without making sure the risk protection is in place. And this is a transition period. My job is to make a business worthy of transitioning. And then we bring in the accountants, the financial planners, the attorneys of how you get it done. We have to talk about transition of land versus transition of operations. And all of that can be done. And I actually have people who laugh and enjoy this journey. Can you believe it? When you take out the pressure and the pain and you break it down incrementally so that they're not overwhelmed. If we get we don't depend on a will, because wills are changed on a whim to transition assets, then all that isn't talking about we're dead, now somebody else gets it. We've talked about how you transition it before you get to that stage.
We'll get right back to my discussion with Jolene Brown right after a word from RBC Royal Bank. This episode of Mind Your Farm Business is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. In many farm families, the older generation is thinking about life after farming, while the younger generation is excited for the future and poised to take the reins. Our people have the expertise to help all parties prepare for succession and put their plans in motion. Your farm's legacy and its future is too important to leave to chance. Go to rbc.com/agriculture to find an ag specialist near you. I think there is a lot of farms, and maybe I'm being way too optimistic and thinking too utopian, but I think there is a lot of farms that miss that golden age of, they think too much in, okay, younger generation comes in, older generation, the farm transition happens. The older generation either thinks they have to leave mm-hmm. or the younger generation tells them they'd have to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. And there's this period of partnership where the younger generation yeah. and the older generation working together as partners.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of farms miss out on that.
That's because we're missing leadership. What we have on our farms, I find, are really great producers, and they're here at this event. They're good at the weeds, the seeds, the breeds, the feeds, the money, machinery, and the marketing. But it's the people that do all the production. And here's what I find, Sean. When it comes to leading in a family business, you've got to decide what is needed before who is going to lead. So we have to know the education, the personality, the character, and the experience in order to lead. Now, lead has something to do with, we make sure we have a common goal. We make sure we get the money reports and we share that so there's transparency. We make sure that we hire people, not necessarily family members, but we hire good employees, that we coach them, we correct them, or we fire them. We have to make sure that we have people who will deal with conflict at the mosquito bite level and be a good commercial for their business in the public and for agriculture. And so I say, so look at your leader in agriculture right now. How are they doing? And what I find is you do not intentionally choose the right leader. You're going to go by default, which is the oldest son,
yep.
The one who's worked here the longest, and don't get me started on the golden child who can do no wrong but has been anointed to lead.
We all have those.
Now, please, no, I didn't say that the oldest son or the one who's worked here the longest should not be the leader. But I'm saying it was an intentional choice based on the people skills of that person, not just production. And right now, I have 6 family businesses who have the daughter-in-laws of the leaders of the business.
Awesome.
And what's crazy is that everybody's going, we don't want her to own anything. We're trying to keep her out of the business. What do you mean a daughter-in-law should lead? And I say to them, so why do you think this is a good idea? And they eventually come to, well, they came from a different school of background. But here's the real reason, Sean. She's scared to death of doing something wrong. She does everything exactly right. Hmm. But I tell the family who elects her as the leader, I say, do you know she can fire you? That she's going to have a big say in who gets paid what? That she's going to expect performance reviews. Do you know that? Because you cannot elect somebody a leader and not let them lead. And then I say to whoever's the leader, you've got to have a peer group or a mastermind group outside of this family business, because you're not going to get the support or the growth and leadership that you need from these people. They're going to be great at what they manage and produce and labor. They're going to be great at that because you've hired them well. But you're going to have support for what you do, because you not only need a really sharp mind, you have to have a strong spine.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times that as this transition happens, what happens a lot of times is there's these, you know, these petty conflicts, there's a lack of trust, there's, you know, we have to work on those things on a daily basis. I think people should treat it more like when we put our kids in sports. Why do we do that? We want our kids to be active and get out there and play and learn skills. But a big part of it is we take pride in our children succeeding and getting to watch them and seeing them grow and develop mm-hmm. skills. Why don't we treat that it the same way on the farm, mm-hmm. where it doesn't have to be this adversarial relationship? Because I know why that happens. Assets and money are involved. It's a little bit different.
Yep.
But think about it from with that same sort of attitude of watching this farm continue and to grow and really taking pleasure in the opportunity for your family to kind of keep on going. I wish more people looked at it upon that way.
That's a journey. It's a journey that production walks alongside of it. But what I find for most in agriculture, production is the forefront and the people skills are way behind.
Mm.
We've got the best people on this planet with a good intent.
Very good.
And they have strong values and they want it done right. But since they don't know what right is, they don't do anything. And then we get into one heck of a mess. And I clean that up a little bit because the messes are worse than heck. And then they call me. And then we've got fighting on the way to the funeral home. We've got people not talking to each other. We got brothers fighting with pitchforks in the dairy barn. And then they call me.
Yeah.
Because then I can't mediate. I have to dictate.
What do you think about the idea of whether or not you're in the transition or not, but working on, say, personality tests?
Uh-huh.
What do you think about stuff like that? Is that valuable so that people have a better understanding of the personalities and why people react certain ways and those sorts of things?
That's only helpful if you do something with what the analysis tells you. Because it's not just telling you about them, it's telling what you need to do to work well with them.
Exactly.
And whether it's a DISC profile or many others that are out there that are very good, it'll help you understand you, because you've taken it yourself and you see each of them. But you have to go the next step. Now that you know, what does that mean? Do we have them working in their areas of natural ability? If you have a real introvert person, well, you're not going to put them where they have to deal with public and negotiate contracts. Mm. You know, it goes back to the leader utilizing. And then also when you have conflict management in place, and I've got a really simple conflict management plan that I make the people sign, and I've got to have a leader hold him or herself to account first. But then you see, then we can deal with mosquito bite differences and not have to do passive aggressive or hold it inside or wait for an explosion or not talk to each other again. There's such joy that we can have with the generations of a family business. I find that when they take time to a pause to applaud all that they have done, then we deal with the other stuff a whole lot easier as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's about the group celebrating some of the achievements and what's happening and recognizing some of those individual things, because everybody contributes to the farm in different ways.
Yes.
right? I think a lot of times it's like, well, you know, we leadership again is one of those things. We look to the leader mm-hmm. as, oh boy, you sure done a great job. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a lot of people inside this family yeah. unit that have really contributed to make all this happen.
So the number one question when I've got them around and we're at that stage is I say to each of them, how are you going to help them do their job better? How are you going to help mom do her job better? How are you going to help sister-in-law do her job better? How are you going to help cousin do his or her job better? How are you going to do and then how are you going to help the leader do his job better? Because what I have to always assess is their goodwill in the family. A goodwill is three things. Is there a common goal, a reason they're in business, that they believe that we're going to stick in this and we're in it for the long haul? The second is they're going to deal with conflict at the mosquito bite level. But the third is key, and that is how are we going to help people succeed in their jobs?
Yeah. And the younger generation showing up as if they're the, you know, Britain or France or Spain in the imperial times, colonialism showing up and saying, I'm here, I went to school, I'm back, now give me some assets.
Oh.
That and then that happens.
Yeah.
No different than, you know, Britain going to India.
Yeah.
The reality is that is not the right attitude, and that, you know, the older generation has every right to be like, I don't think so.
Yeah, but listen, I just had a conversation in the hallway here at this hall, and I finally said to mom and dad, why are you ruining your children's life with too much money? You know, yeah. They've not to put had any skin in the game. And you're going to gift them this before they even have started. They haven't worked someplace else for 3 years, brought those assets to buy something. And they said, well, what are we going to do with it? And I said, do you remember the first time you bought that tractor, that section of land, and you had to sign your name to that paper? And then you came home and you sweat blood. Are you going to make the payments?
The gravity of that.
And when you finally tore it up because you made it, you're taking that away from the next generation. So we have to be very careful. It's not a younger generation just saying, I want the assets. It's how do we transition that they have earned the right? And I say to the senior generation, your kids don't have to start where you are at today. You didn't. But neither can they start where you started. So that's when we get down to the how you do what you do. And there are many ways of which that can be done.
Yeah. Hey, Jolene, this has been awesome to talk with you. I love having you on the Mind Your Farm Business podcast. I love running into you at these farm shows across North America. It's so great to chat with you.
Thank you. And you know, I was looking for you too, because the sunshine comes out even though we're in a building. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks a lot, Jolene. Such a fun, insightful discussion with Jolene Brown. What I love about Jolene is her no-nonsense approach to this difficult topic. In many ways, the farming part is easy compared to trying to transition a family farming operation. Jolene made some real sense of a topic that throws many operations into the ditch instead of staying in the right lane. Find more episodes of Mind Your Farm Business at mindyourfarmbusiness.com. Thanks to RBC Royal Bank. And until next time, keep on minding your farm business.